thanks for the organizers for the invitation. So I talk about the group of powers and translations. So let me start by giving some motivations to study this problem, and then I will formulate two different kinds of questions that we can ask about this kind of problems. So one is more related to this first motivation that I will give, and then there are other kind of questions which are more related to group theory and to logic also. Okay? So one of the motivations is the study of hyperbolic polycycles. Okay, so you have, let's say, a configuration like this with saddle singular points at each one of these corners. And then, okay, let's suppose that you want to count. You suppose that this is inside some family of vector fields, and now you are going to bifurcate this configuration so you can break these connections. And just to put this in our context, in the generic case, the essential part of the first return map is given as follows. So let us suppose that each one of these saddles is linearizable. Okay? So here we put some coordinates on each one of the transverse sections, let's say x1, i1, and then I suppose that this local Dirac map is given by i1 is equals to R1 to the power R1 for some R1 positive real number. Okay? And now, okay, so we suppose that this holds in each one of these transitions. And now we are going to put the following simplifying assumption that this breaking connection is controlled by some parameter, let's say A1. And so if we put here X2 as the coordinate on the second transverse section, you should say that x2 is equal to y1 plus a1 for some a1 real number. Okay? And now, of course, you have y2 is equal to x2 to there 2, and so on. And now this closes up with after one tour here. And so to the equation for the limit cycles is of course the equation for the fixed points of this first return map. And so you get the following equation. So you have x to the power r1 plus a1, and then you put to the power r2 and you add a2 and so on, final to the power rn plus an, and then you are going you want to know when this is equal to x. Okay? So of course, here we are just looking for. Okay, so you suppose that the A are the parameters of your family, and now we are trying to figure out how many fixed points bifurcate from the origin. So, in this case, we suppose, of course, that for A1, AN equals to zero, the origin is a fixed point, and then we perturb a little bit these parameters, the translation parameters, and then we are trying to figure out which is the cyclicity of the origin by perturbing A1 AN. Okay? So this problem has been studied by Mortada in his thesis. So there's some quite surprising results about the cyclicity. So Mortada was able to give explicit computations up to order n equals to 5. Okay? So let me just give a small table here. So let's call this cyclicity. So you have this for n equals 2, 1. You have the cyclicity equals 2, 1. For n equals 2, 2, you have 2, 3, 3. And then it was a quite surprising result at that time, that for 4 polycycles, that means that this family can have up to 5 fixed points, or fixed points bifurcation from the origin. Okay? So one interesting thing is that if you look at the global family, the number of fixed points for x any real number, the number of fixed points of this equation can be larger than the cyclicity of the origin. Okay, so let me just give an example to see that the number of solutions of that equation. Okay. On R plus, let's see, yes, okay, can be larger than the cyclicity of zero. Okay, so even for n equals to 2, it's easy to see. So here, let's consider, let's say x to the R1 plus A1 for some R1 positive. And now, of course, if you look at this function, you are intersecting it with the diagonal to look for the fixed point. And then for R1 greater than 1. Okay. So it's given by something like this. Okay. So you see that this point, okay, by translation, this fixed point can go through the origin. But the second one can never go until the origin. Okay, so the cyclicity of the origin in this case is 1, but there are 2 fixed points. There are 2 solutions for this equation, and this is the greatest possible number. Okay, so this was one of the motivations to study, to count the number of fixed points. There is a second motivation which comes from the singular perturbation theory. And I think that in this case it's even more richer, the kind of phenomenon that it can happen. Okay? So you look for this, which is called the generalized Leonard equation. With singular perturbations. So here you suppose that F and G are polynomials. Okay? So this family depends on some small epsilon. And of course, for epsilon equals to 0, you have a typical singular perturbation configuration, that which is the following. So you see the curve for epsilon equals to 0, the curve y equals to f of x is a curve of singular points. Okay, let me try to write it correctly here, just to illustrate what I... Okay, so this is my curve, let's say, y equals to f of x. Okay, so this is usually called this slow curve. And what happens is the following. When epsilon is small, there are some parts of this curve together with some regular orbit. So for the epsilon equals to 0, the dynamics is very simple because everything goes in this way or other way. There is no vertical component for the vector field. But when you bifurcate, there is some slow dynamics which make you move along this slow curve. So there are possibility of creating some return maps here. Okay, so I draw to you some configuration which can bifurcate in 2 limit cycles. For instance, this one. So this configuration that I've drawn in yellow, which is usually called a canard cycle. So of course this is just an invariant set for epsilon equals to 0, but by taking epsilon positive, this can bifurcate into limit cycles. Okay? Exactly as the polycycle can bifurcate into limit cycles. So Dumortier and Roussary, they were able to compute some kind of first return map, which appears here, okay, exactly in that, as in that case, and up to some ingenious rescaling of the coordinates, you find that on some conical type region in the product space of X, Y, and epsilon, you get as a first return map, I mean, for, up to some generic conditions, exactly that equation which appears there. So the equation for limit cycles is exactly the, that one which appears there. Okay, so I'm parameterizing here by some x. Okay. Okay, so there are two differences here which make this problem more, more rich in this case. Is that in this, in the, in this formulation, you're looking for points, not only which bifurcate from the origin, but global fixed points. So here we suppose that R is any positive real number. So n is given by the number of jumps that you, so this is a jump here, so this is a jump. So here, of course, for instance, you have n equals to 2 here, okay? So this jump, they play more or less the role of this Dulac maps which appear there, okay? Sorry? What?
You have 4 because you go up.
Yeah,
you go
yeah, you can have any number that you want. No, this is not, this are not jumps, only this one, okay? I can explain in more detail later, but I just say to that this equation appears here, and there is some, something which makes this problem even richer, is that in this case, you can have that the Ri adjust, they can be negative, okay? So this this cannot happen for, of course, for that equation. Okay. So of course you can abstract from these situations and just ask for the first general problem. Let's say problem one. So let me call introduce some terminology. I call a word of length n in the group of power and translations. So this is just something of this form. So okay, so x to r1 plus a1 rn plus an. Okay. Okay. So for the moment, I just suppose that aur and the ri are just non-zero. Okay. So of course, what's the interpretation of this word? So we'd like to interpret it as an analytic function. Of course, so this we have to take care a little bit because, of course, if the inner parenthesis gives us a negative function, so there's no sense in taking the root perhaps here. So the domain of definition under this, let's put this assumption for instance, then we can guarantee that the domain of definition contains some neighborhood of the infinity. Okay? So, define it, it's always an analytic function on some interval of the form, let's say, x0 plus infinity. And let's suppose that this is the maximal domain of definition. So how we define this maximal domain of definition in terms of the parameters A and R? This is just a domain where each one of the inner parentheses gives you a positive function. Okay, so that in order that you are able to take the next root of the linear equation. Okay? So now we can formulate the problem. Follows. So of course, So let me introduce the following. Let me say that fixed point of n is the supremum of the number of fixed points of the WIR on ERR such that, so the WAR of length n, okay? And so the problem is to give an upper bound for FP of n. Okay. And I explained to you that in some cases we are also interested in giving a lower bound. So what is known about this problem? So why it's interesting? First of all, why is it interesting to give a lower bound by the following problem? There is a sum of Dismay's problem, which more or less implicitly he conjectures that the Hilbert number, so the Hilbert number is the maximum number of limit cycles for a polynomial of degree n. So he more or less conjectures that the Hilbert number should grow polynomial. This, okay. Now, if you look at my drawings, it's easy to see that you can prove that h of n is always larger than some function, let's say some constant, time fp of n plus b. Okay. So, if you're able to prove that this function grows very quickly, we could give some interesting examples of polynomial vector fields which have many limit cycles. Okay? So I think the best number that we know up to now is that h of n is larger than 1 over n over 2 n z square log of n. I think it is a result of Christopher. Calling Christopher, if I don't make a mistake. Okay? No. He uses a sort of perturbation of Hamiltonians. No, so this is far from the singular perturbations world. Okay, but perhaps using this and proving that if FP can grow very very quickly with n, we could. Okay, so suppose that we are able to prove that this grows exponentially, so we could prove that the Hilbert number grows exponentially also. Okay, so. Which are the known upper bounds? So, of course, this equation, in fact, is you can formulate it using a system of exponential and polynomial equations. So, you can write it, write in the place of x exponential of capital X. You can write it as a system as follows. So exponential of R1 X1, exponential of X2, A2 plus exponential of R2 X2 is exponential of X3, and so on. So using this formulation, you can make this equation enter inside the theory of Hovansky, the theory of phenomena of Hovansky, because each of Hovansky's equations is a Pfaffian equation. And then, okay, so using the theory of Hovansky of phenomena, you prove that there is the following upper bound. Okay, so you see that it's a exponential upper bound. We are going to see that in at least for n, for a small n, this is very irrealistic as an upper bound. Okay, so in fact, I found another method to give an upper bound that is at least for small values of n is very, it's much, I mean, it's better than this bound of Hovansky. And I explain a little bit quickly now. Okay. So it's based on an algorithm of derivation and division. Okay. So if you remember, how do we prove them? For instance, the theorem of Descartes, counting the real positive solutions of a general polynomial of this type. So if you want to count the zeros on R plus of this polynomial, that is not necessarily a polynomial, I mean generalized polynomial is possible of real exponents here. So the idea is that you can derivate, okay, so you divide by the lowest one, and then you derivate, you eliminate one monomial, and then you do by induction. Okay? So this is the usual derivation division algorithm. And it will work in a generalized way for solving this kind of equation. Okay? The problem is that we are not able to prove that at each time you decrease by one the number of monomials, but in fact there is some very different behavior which appears. That in fact even if you start with an equation quite simple as this and you start to apply your derivation algorithm, the number of monomials it grows very very widely, and then it decreases again. Okay, so let me just explain quickly this algorithm. So the idea is the following. I think it's a little bit similar to the approach that Joris has used yesterday to attack the zero test algorithm. Okay, so we introduce some auxiliary variables. So y2 is equal to y1 plus x to the power r1. So this is a1 plus y1 r1. And now we define inductively the following: yn is equal to an minus 1 plus yn minus 1 to the rn minus 1. Okay. So of course, yn represents your final function. Okay. Sorry, yn plus an represents your to the power rn represents your final function. But it will be useful for us to look at general polynomials in these variables. Okay? So we think at a monomial in these variables. So it's something like this. Okay? And I say that this is so the each AY is some monomial on R positive, let's say, just R. Okay? And I say that this monomial is regular. If the following holds. So, first of all, I can write EJ. So, let's say I write EJ in the form chi J RJ plus LJ. So, the RJ is are related to this exponents which appear here. So the first assumption which says that it's regular is that if chi j equals to zero, then lj is positive. Sorry, I forgot to say that kj, lj, in principle are just integers, okay? And the second assumption to define a regular monomial is that lj plus kj minus 1 is always positive or equal to zero. Okay? So this is our assumption. And in fact, when you start to apply the derivation division algorithm to this function, we have to at some point to treat general polynomials formed by monomials which are regular by this condition, which under this definition which appears here. Okay? So now, let's say that a polynomial P on R yn yn, so this is a polynomial in these variables, okay? So we define, first of all, the multi-degree of M. So this is, for me, this is M. Okay, so I define it this way. It will be KN, N plus KN minus 1, etc., L2 plus K. So this is always a, by my assumption, this is always a number, a natural, a vector of natural numbers. Okay? And I suppose the following. So I say that P is homogeneous if, let's say, P can be written as a sum of AN and AK, AS and S, where each, let's say, homogeneous of multi-degree. Mu, with each one of these monomials equals to, okay, so this is the usual definition of homogeneous. And now I introduce in this space a derivation, okay, which is in fact related to the derivation. When you take the derivation of this function with respect to x, you see that the deriving y n will give you some monomials in of y n, will give you some monomials in y n minus 1, y n minus 2, and so on. So there's a derivation here. On, let's say, R Y1 of N, which is given simply by the following. So deriving, so I define this in a single monomial. Deriving YK, so this is just a chain rule applied here to this monomial, is given by R1, sorry, yes, R1, RK minus 1, times YK minus 1, R1, RK minus 1 minus 1, Y1, R1 minus 1. Okay? So it's easy to verify that if you have a polynomial which is homogeneous, and each one of these, of its monomials is regular, this property is preserved by this derivation. Okay? So of course we can take some polynomial in this general variables and then derive it, but the real stuff is to choose the correct division. Okay, which is the correct monomial that I have to use after derivation to for the remember here I have to divide by something here just to start, and then I choose the monomial that I use by in my division. Okay, so this is the derivation and division. So I take P and I divide by some monomial. Okay, M. So M is, let's say, Y1 to E1, YN to EN. And then the choice is the following. So let's put like this. And then the choice is the following, AJ. Okay, let me write it as KJ, RJ plus LJ. Okay, and the algorithm says the following, that such that KJ is the minimum of all the small KJ, such that the monomial KJ RJ plus is in the support of P. Okay, so I define it in the obvious way, the support of P, and then I take the small kj which appears in the exponents, and then I take the lj as the minimum of all the lj. So there's the subtlety here is the following, that is the minimum of all the lj which appears in the exponents of in the support of P, such that something of this form. So I fix the KJ, and then I take the RJ plus LJ is in the support of P. Okay? So I use this here, and then to choose the LG, I restrict my choice to the LG with the first coordinate fixing. Okay? So I don't want to give too much details because this is not the main point of my talk, but I would just like to say that using this choice of derivation and division, the algorithm works, it finishes. Okay? So what I mean by finishing, it means that after a finite number of steps of derivation and division, you finish with a single monomial. And this monomial will give, of course, for the single monomial, there will be no roots because it gives you a positive analytic function. And then there's a bound for the number of solution of your original equation. Okay? So the lemma is the following. Just an abstract setting. So P regular and homogeneous of multi-degree let's say mu and n, okay, then after a finite number of derivation divisions, after a derivation division step, we get a polynomial, let's say P prime, with the same properties, such that, let's say, the multi-degree of P prime is less for the lexicographical order than the multi-degree of P. Okay? So you have gained something. And it's easy to see that when this multi-degree is equal to zero, then your polynomial is just the constant polynomial. Just one. Okay? The problem is this, is that there is a decrease with respect to the lexicographical order, so it's hard to estimate how many steps do you need. Okay? So how do we apply this to our original problem? We do the following. Well, what I know is that even if the first coordinate decreases, but the following ones can increase. They can increase very wildly. I don't know if it's correct, but I mean, it's not possible to say that all the coordinates remain stable. One of them decrease. One decrease. Okay, so later. Okay. So how do you apply this to the original problem? Do you remember that you had our equation of fixed points, so we can formulate now it as a in this using these variables y, and this gives the following equation: yn to the power rn plus an minus y1. Okay. So for starting, this is not very good because it doesn't satisfy the two hypotheses that I put there. It's not homogeneous. Okay. So no, it's regular, but it's not homogeneous. So I have to derive something which is homogeneous, but this work has two steps. So it takes p prime of x, so just the derivation which appears there. Okay, so this is r1, rn, yn to the power rn minus 1, y1 r1 minus 1, minus 1. Okay, so this constant disappears, but there is still this term which makes things not homogeneous. But for the second step, this will be, so we can just make the computation this. This will be regular and homogeneous. Okay? So now we can apply our algorithm starting from this. And then, so there is my derivation divisional algorithm. So after some quite a high number of steps, we get something which is equals to 1. And now this is just a very elementary use of the Rolle's property to say that the number of fixed points of the solution of our original equation is given by the number of steps that I used here plus 2. Okay? Because I used 2 derivations and then this number of derivations here. At each step, we lose at most one solution. Okay? So we conclude. Sorry. Not very. By Rolle's theorem, that Fp of n is smaller than. So there's some. Okay, so I forgot to say that the number of steps that we need in our derivation division algorithm, in fact, it depends. So number of steps depends only on the support of P, on the lemma, okay? So in particular, it doesn't depend on neither on A, the particular values, neither on the particular value of these exponents, okay? Just on the support. So by Rolle's lemma, we know that this number is smaller than the number of derivation division steps plus 2. Okay? So I will not annoy you with examples, but let me just draw you a small table to show you that this, at least for small values of n, this gives a better bound than the Hovansky's bound. Okay? So we know the exact value of Fp of n up to n equals to 4. No, 3, sorry. So this is the Hovansky bound. And then the derivation division. Okay. So I've shown to you that for n equals to 1, we have at most 2 fixed points. You remember my drawing? There's at most 2 solutions, okay? And the Hovansky's bound in this case is 8. Okay, my algorithm gives 2, so it's not too bad. 4 equals to 2, there are 3. The Hovansky bound is this one, okay? And I get 3. So this is quite interesting. N equals to 4, for n equals to 3, it was quite tricky to obtain the exact value. And there's some curious things which appear here. So I was able to make this computation with together with Roberto Sarri. So for n equals to 3, you remember that you have 6 parameters, because your family is a1 plus x to the power r1 plus, let's say, R3 plus A3 equals to X. So we have 6 free parameters. So it's very difficult to explore this parameter space using naive ideas. But using some ideas from bifurcation theory, we were able to find out in some cutout of the parameter space a sort of butterfly configuration. So if you remember the list of configurations, the list of bifurcations of Renetón, the bifurcation of the polynomial of degrees 5 is something of this form. So this is the butterfly. Okay. And then there's a very, very thin region where we have 5 solutions. Okay. So this is really, really, really thin. I made the things completely out of scale here because this is a very, very thin region. It was probably impossible to find it out without using some ingenious ideas. Okay. So for n equals to 5, we know that this is 5. It's a very, very small region here. I can give you the explicit value if you want. So Hovansky's bound here is of order 10 to the power 7, and we get 5 with our derivation division. Now, for we don't know these values. Okay? Okay, so this is about 10 to the power 4. And my algorithm gives 30, but I don't know if it's accurate. But unfortunately, my algorithm is also exponentially growing in terms of n. Okay? So for n equals to 5, for instance, I need this number of steps. Okay? So one interesting thing is that even if you start, let's say, even if you start with a quite simple polynomial, under application of the derivations, the number of monomials explodes. So at some step here, I think I have 65,000 monomials at some step, and then it starts to decrease again in a very quite complicated way. So let me pass to the second kind of question that you can ask. So of course, one natural question should be, at this moment, for those which like bifurcation theory, should be to compute this number here. Okay. So let me just pass you to a second kind of question, which is more related not to the number of fixed points, but to the values of the parameters where this equation is identically satisfied. Okay, so this is related to the question of the freedom of the freeness of the group. Okay, so let me talk about the structure. The group. So just to formulate things more rigorously, you take the group of all translations. Okay, let's call this a translation A, with A real number, and you take the group of all powers. P of R positive. So the group of all maps of this form, let's call this ER. Okay, with R real strictly positive number. Okay, and now we take the group G, which is generated by composing translations and powers. So a typical word of G, of course, would be T A1 E R1. Let's say, sorry, okay, no problem. E R N. Let's say T R N. Okay, and there's a question which has initially been posed by in some particular cases. So, it's a question concerning this group, and this is asking if this group is a free product of T and R. So, is there two different ways to write the same function? So originally, this question has been posed to a particular subgroup of this by a mathematician from the biologician called Detman. I don't know exactly which was the motivation because I was not able to trace back the original reference. But his question was the following. I was not able to add that. I think it's Detman. So I found the citation of this problem in one of the papers of Cohen, which I will talk a little bit in a moment. But he says that this question comes from logic, but I was not able to find why. Okay? So this question is the following. You take this group, just the translation by plus and minus 1, the power 3, and the power 1 over 3. Okay? So in this case, you can look at this, at the maps in G as a sort of permutation of in the line of real numbers. Okay? So this question was, is there any relations in this group? Okay? So it took quite a while to prove this, even if it seems a little bit simple as a question. And in 1998, there's a proof of White. showing that indeed this is a, this generates a free group. Okay, so later on this question interested a little bit the people from group theory, because it's quite nice to have explicit realization of free groups. Okay, so we know by there are some general theorems which say that most of the groups are free. I think it's a theorem. But let's say if you take the subgroups of the linear group generated by two generators, most of them are free. But we would like to have explicit realization of free groups. It's fine. It's hard to pick out one group and say, is it free or not? It's a quite hard problem. So in this case, it has been proven. So let me just make some timeline here. So in 1990, there is a result of Glass. Another ones where they prove the same thing for TR N, so translation with real numbers, and instead of taking all powers they take just P, let's say all the powers of this form P over Q with P or Q odd coprime integers. Positive integers. Okay, so there's a strong use of Galois theory here to prove this, because they measure some degree of extension of some sort of function field which appears. So this is the basic strategy that they use in both papers. And then the most complete result that is known for the moment is a result of Cohen, which is, in my opinion, a very, very, very hard result. It's about 70 pages of Galois theory, and where he proves this for T of R and P of the rational numbers. Okay, so since he makes a strong use of Galois theory, he needs to be, let's say, in the algebraic setting here. So he needs to have rational powers at most. So the question that I stated there is a question of Graham Higman. So he's a specialist on the theory of free groups, and he asked the following question: Is this free product? Okay. So I try to do something with this problem using other ideas, because of course I think there is not too much hope to use these techniques here, because Galois theory doesn't apply, at least in the usual sense, to this to real exponents. Okay. So I tried three different approaches to attack this problem. So I'd like just to report on these approaches and say that at each one of these cases I was able to treat some particular cases of this conjecture. Okay? So there are several formulations for this. I found at least five formulations. But the first one is the following. We can use the derivation division algorithm. Why you can use it? So we start with a word like this, okay, and then we proceed exactly as I've written before, by derivation and division. So at each time there is some monomial which appears, and we look at the coefficients of this monomial. So these coefficients they define a sort of ideal of coefficients, okay, and then the idea should be to compute the ideal of coefficients of the polynomials P prime and so on up to P n. Okay? So we know that this ideal is some ideal which is contained, in fact, is contained in this ring. Okay? And to prove this conjecture of Higman, we should be able to prove the following. That V, that the variety defined by I is contained on the union of AI equals to 0 with RI equals to, okay, let's put a minus 1. Okay. So in fact, these conditions here correspond to say that your word is formally reducible. Okay, so of course here to say that it's a full product, we should not consider the case where the AN are 0 or the RN are 1. Okay. So why I put minus 1 here? Because Cohen also put the question. We take this, but instead of taking P, we should take P of R minus R minus plus or minus 1. Minus 1. Okay. It's easy to see that if you admit the exponent minus 1, there are some relations here possible. Just a kind of a Moebius transformation. And you can generate the identity by non-trivial Moebius transformations. Okay? Yeah? 5 minutes. So using this formulation, I was able to prove the results up to order 4. Why? Because of course for n up to for n equals to 4, we still have a reasonable number of steps in our algorithm. So the derivation divisional algorithm in this case take 13 steps, so we're able to make computation this, but I have no hope to use at least the computational approach to higher values of n. Okay? So yeah. So of course the advantage of this approach is that we really compute this ideal. So we can answer the question of both questions of Cohen and Higman. Okay. So there is another approach, which is associated to looking at a symplectic expansion. So we suppose that exponents are positive. So it's very easy to write up the asymptotic expansion of a word. And for this, we take the following auxiliary constants. So delta 0 is R1 times Rn. And then delta k is Rk plus 1 Rn. Okay? Delta 1. Delta n is equal to 1. And in fact, the exponents which will appear in this asymptotic expansion will belong to the same group generated by this delta. It's a very quite easy computation. Let me just write the asymptotic expansion just like this. So there is it takes some f in the semi group generated by delta 1, delta n, and then there is this sum here. Okay, for all k vector of natural numbers such that k delta is equal to S. And then there's a quite complicated coefficient here. It's a sort of a hypergeometric, generalized hypergeometric coefficient. It's given by the following. Delta 1, delta 0, delta 1, K1, delta 0 minus K1, delta 1, Kn bar. AK, so this is the multi-index notation, X delta 0 minus S. Okay? So in fact, this, we can say that this is the coefficient AS, which depends on R and A. And of course, the natural way of proceeding would be to compute the ideal of coefficients generated by this coefficient A of S. So it's easy to see that all of them are just polynomials. But there is a big problem here, which is due to the fact that a member S of the semigroup can be written in several different ways as integer combinations of this delta. Okay, so this is the problem of resonance. Let me just explore a little bit more this. So there is one very easy case, which is the case where each one of these sums contains just a single monomial. And this corresponds, I'll say, so this is true. For instance, if you suppose that delta 1 up to delta n are q linear independent. Okay? So the problem is to compute this ideal. Sorry. Sorry, not a good notation here. Let's see. Okay. So the easy case is the case where delta 1, delta n are q linear independent. Okay, so in a certain sense, we are in the opposite case with respect to the Cohen's case. Because in this case, in his case, all the delta are Q linear dependent. Okay? So in this case, of course, what happens here is that each CSRS is a single monomial. Because there is a unique way to write a member of the semigroup. Okay? So this automatically implies that sum A is equal to zero. So we are finished here. There is a case that I was able to treat. It's the case where there is some mild resonance. What I mean by mild resonance is the following. Perhaps write this. How much time do I have?
3 minutes.
3? Okay. So which is the case of mild resonance is the following. I admit some linear dependence between these exponents, but if two exponents are Q linear dependent, they should be equal. Okay? Let me formulate this precisely. And then let me just finish by giving some idea of the proof. I'm not able to talk anything about the Witte group. I'm sorry. So the theorem is the following. So let's choose some collection zeta 1, zeta s on C star s. Some collection of Q linear independent elements. And suppose the following. So first thing, that the delta 1, delta n are chosen among this collection of q-linear independent vectors. Okay. Second, of course, we are excluding the case where these exponents are equal to 1, because we suppose that our word is not formally reducible. So this corresponds exactly, if you look at the definition of the delta in terms of the r, to say that two consecutive delta are different. Okay? So this is just to say that the word is not formally reducible. Okay, together with this one. Okay, then W of X is never asymptotic to X. Okay, so let me just finish giving you an idea for the case where S is equal to 2. So the first step is a little bit easy, but there is a final argument. I think it's interesting. So let's give a small idea of the proof for n equals to 2. So here you have your vector delta is given by, let's say, alpha, beta, alpha, beta, alpha, beta. Okay? With alpha, beta, Q independent. Okay. So now you choose some values of S. for instance, for F equals to alpha and F equals to beta, from this you deduce, for instance, let's say that you call the coefficients associated to this, the even coefficients you call them A, and the odd coefficients you call them B. Okay? Just differentiate them. So for S equals to alpha, you write up the coefficient C, S, and you get that A1 plus AN equals to 0. So this is our first relation. And then for the second one, of course, you get the symmetric thing. But you get nothing more, but just take a multiple of this relation. So you have to take some mixed relations here. So for instance, if you take S equals to alpha plus K beta, and S equals to K alpha plus beta, for K varying from 1 to N, then after some computations, you get the following equation. So for S equals to this one, you get something like this. So this is A1, B1 plus Bn to the power K plus A2 and n bn to the power k, and this should be equal to 0. There's some constant which appears here, I'll not write it, some non-zero constant. And for the second one, so let me call this, just to make things shorter, I call this b1, b2, and this one is bn. Okay? b1 to the power k, b2 to the power k, bn to the power k. And for the second equation, we get something similar, so this will be B1 A1 to the power K plus BN AN to the power K equals to 0. Okay? So what's the idea now? There's a sort of a van der Mond determinant which appears with respect to the first equation and the second equation. So I will finish with this. Okay, so it's first to take K equals to 1, 2, up to N, where N is this order here. So you take this you have this matrix here. B1, BN, and this should vanish. And you have the same thing for B1, BN. Okay? So now you have to play with these two van der Mond determinants. But there's not so easy because, in fact, this saying that this determinant is zero just gives you some linear relations, but you have to play with the two systems at the same time. So later I found that this is an argument which is very usual when you work in the matroid theory. So it's a matroid theory, a sort of abstraction of the theory of linear dependency. And it's very useful here. So in this case, we are also able to prove that there is no relations in the group. Okay, thank you.